I have the privilege this morning of introducing a new staff member to you. We're a church planting church, and so we're always looking for somebody else that we could step in with to start talking about what it would look like to plant a church. And we have a new church planting resident with us here this morning that's going to be around us and exploring what it would look like to plant a church with us. And his name is Wally Harrison, and he's going to be preaching this morning. Wally, if you could stand and we could welcome you, Sarah, and the children. So Sarah and three children that he has, and I'll let Wally do a little more explanation of your family, but welcome, brother. Yep.
All right. Good morning, Fairhaven. How's everybody feeling? Good. Excellent. All right. We're going to jump in. Let's see here. Because they stood up, it's some of these people that are with me are shorter, and you might not have seen them, say, over there, so we'll throw their picture up on screen. This is the crew, if you will. So my wife, Sarah, and myself, I grew up in Hudsonville. Graduated from Hudsonville High School a few long years ago. And so my wife grew up about a block away from here, and she graduated from Jennison High School. And so, yeah. So we are just doing our part to bring a little shalom to Hudsonville and Jennison. And we have three boys. So Sawyer in the Superman shirt there. Sawyer is 9 years old. He just made the all-star team in baseball. Well done, son. That's good. And then Eli there in the Batman shirt. They're all superheroes. So Eli is 6 years old. And then Jude, he is the little guy. He's three. He looks a little happy, does he not? And it's not his birthday we were celebrating, but just a little bit ways back, it was my wife's. So that's what we're doing there. So these are my people. And we're thrilled to be with you all, thrilled to be here, not just this morning. But I'm thrilled to be able to join this team. The staff here and in Harbor Churches has been absolutely fantastic and incredibly welcoming. And you guys went way above and beyond to welcome me with such an unbelievable, like, you put together this whole thing just to welcome me and my family, which I want to first say I'm really grateful for. It's amazing. I don't mean to criticize, but I grew up in Hudsonville, not Peru. We got some wires crossed a little bit, but it's okay. It's still a really neat idea. It's fun. We'll make the best of it. I'll keep, like, maybe try and get tan and we'll work it out or something. I know it's VBS. If you're questioning, oh boy, really? He's going to speak. I'm going to give it a shot. So I got my water bottle. That will keep me hydrated about my first hour in. We'll rehydrate and then we'll jump into part two. So yeah. What we need to do to get figured out together, just so you know, I like to move and I like to be interactive as I teach. So if you're thinking, did he just ask a rhetoric question? Are we supposed to respond? The answer is yes. Go ahead, respond if you holler out, if you answer. I love it. So we want to jump in and we want to be interactive. That's the way we roll. Thrilled to jump into this series, summer series called Unfinished. The idea that you and I are just beginning here today. We have today. So whether you're 80, 90, 10, or 25, we're just getting started. And we have today. And so the hope is that from here we'll grow. We'll become more. We'll take that next right step with God. That's the invitation of this series. It's the idea that we would live lives that produce fruit. And so we've been looking at this letter in Galatians by a man named Paul writing to the church of Galatia. And he's writing them and he's encouraging them, inviting them to grow more and more and more in
Christ.
And so let's jump into Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. We're going to begin there, and then we're going to roll out, and we've got a long ways to go. But it begins this: "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. But do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law, that is the Torah, is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor as yourself." The entire law, the Torah, is what Paul is talking about. So when you're in the Hebrew scriptures, sometimes referred to as the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, you have 613 commands. And then what we see in there is 613 commands get wrapped up, summarized, if you will, in the 10 commandments, is what we sometimes call it, the 10 words. And then from there, Jesus, a couple of different times, says, well, you can sum up all of that in love God, love your neighbor. Paul comes along and keeps getting that thing even tighter, and he says, you can actually wrap this whole thing up in love your neighbor as yourself. And Paul's essentially telling the church, if you cannot love your neighbor, please don't speak of how much you love God. If you cannot love your neighbor, then let's not go ahead and talk about this grandiose love of God. So he's whittling it down, and it's beautiful. And if I were to kind of take that and sum it up and invite us, it would maybe look like this. God spoke, Jesus walked, and we are invited to follow in and through the Spirit. This is the movement, the meta-movement, if you will, of the Scriptures. The meta-movement of Scripture. God spoke, Jesus walked, we follow through Spirit. And I love in this letter the agricultural picture that Paul uses. Now, in the first century, that makes total sense because they live in an agricultural world. But this idea of fruit is such a helpful picture, and we need to reclaim it. Because we live in a world where you push a button, you pull a lever, you shoot a text, and we can have what we want when we want it now. And the idea of fruit is that this takes a little bit of time. You plant, you care for, you got to weed, you got to water, and then gradually things will grow. But it takes time for life to be experienced to the full. And so we get to verse 22 and 23 of chapter 5 in Galatians, and it says this: but a life rooted in Spirit, well, the fruit of the Spirit is this, the outcome, the growth, is love, joy, peace, patience or forbearance, kindness, goodness, circle that one because we're going to head there this morning, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. This is what we want to see. So as we till the soil, as we weed, as we water and are watered, we begin to learn, and you all know in your life that growth is gradual. It takes time. We don't just all of a sudden, I'm good. Oh, I'm patient. I decided to wake up this morning that I'm going to be patient. But then my three sons woke up this morning and changed that idea. Right, parents? Yeah. So there's this idea that, yep, it takes time. It's a process. Growth is gradual. So what I want to do is look at some of that gradual movement this morning. And here's how I want to look at it. I want to look at it in this way. From this point of existence to recognition to goodness. The movement from existence to recognition to goodness. And I want to define these out. So let me first start with existence. So let's go this way. Existence would look like this if I were to define it out. We have this hula hoop. And in this hula hoop, here I stand. I exist. And this hoop is my world. I exist. I'm here. I'm breathing. And this is my world. My life. My work. My job. My family. My schedule. My life is found here. So I have this hoop. and I exist in it. And it's my, which when we live in this world, it's easy to see then when we're driving down the road and the car is going so slow in front of me and I'm thinking, does that person not know that I have to get to work? What is their problem? I have a schedule. I have a job to get to. I have to get going. What is their deal? So there's existing, and so we have a hoop. Now we move to recognition. Recognition would be this. Oh, Greg has a hoop. And Bob and Lucy and Jeff, they have a hoop too. They have a life. How about that? So then maybe it's just this recognition when I'm driving down the road and I'm like, that car is driving crazy. Like, what is their deal? Don't they? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe the passenger is in labor and they're trying to hustle along. I don't know. But I'm going to recognize there might be more going on because other people have a hoop as well. Then when we wake up and recognize things outside of our hoop, we can move to goodness. Goodness is active participation in what God is up to. It's when I step out of my hoop and I see that their hoop's a little cracked, a little broken. They could use a little help. This needs to be put back together, and I believe God is putting it back together. So I'm going to participate in the goodness of God. And so I'm going to step outside of my hoop and move. So this is the movement that I want to do this morning with this. How I want to do it is I'm going to look at a narrative in the Hebrew scriptures. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 25 and we're going to pop along with a narrative. Let's look at a life and how that life moves. So in Genesis chapter 25, we have some brothers, Esau and Jacob. They're twins, but Esau comes out of the chute first. And, oh, jeez. Then Jacob comes along, and the way the text describes it is he's clinging to the heel of his brother. Esau gets named Esau because he's hairy. Jacob gets named Jacob, which is a Hebrew idiom for deceiver or one who deceives. And so you have these brothers, and what we learn in this story is Jacob, the younger brother, spends the first 40-plus years of his life living into that name. He's a deceiver. He is selfish, and he cannot see outside himself. He exists to please himself. He lives in such a way as to get what he wants, to win, to have, to gain for himself. This is Jacob for 40 plus years. So it's not, well, he's just a kid. Ow, well, you know teenagers. You know 30-something. Jacob, you're 40, man. Like, what's going on? Keeps living in this way. And what Jacob does is he destroys his relationship with his dad by tricking his dad, who is at this time getting older and he's blind, and he tricks his dad to deceive his brother, to steal his brother's blessing. And there's nothing more in an honor and shame culture than to shame your family. And that's what Jacob does. He brings shame on his family by tricking his dad, cheating his brother, stealing his blessing. And when he does this, he steals his blessing. He is then told by his mom, you better run because I heard your brother say he wants to kill you. And this isn't like, oh, brothers are fighting and the one brother says, I'm going to get you, I'm going to kill you. And we go, oh, it's cute. Not that that should ever be cute, dear heavens. But he means it. No, I'm going to kill him. Soon as our dad's laid to rest, I'm going to lay him to rest. That's kind of how the narrative goes. And so Jacob runs. And in Jacob's journey, he takes off, he runs, and then one night, in a life in which at this point is just labeled just destructive, this guy runs. He lays down one night on the ground, uses a rock for a pillow, and has this brilliant, fantastic dream. And in this dream, He interacts with the divine. God speaks to him, which raises all kinds of questions. This guy's living a destructive life, and God says, oh, it's time I should connect with him. God connects with this deceiver. And in this dream, God speaks to him and tells him, I'm going to bless you. And so when Jacob wakes up from this dream, he says one of the most profound and stunning lines in the scriptures. He says, whoa, God has been here. He's been with me. He's been in this place the entire time. I wasn't aware. I didn't see it. I didn't catch it. I didn't recognize the divine in my midst. And the word he uses there, I didn't get it, I didn't know, is the word yada. Go ahead and say yada. Yada is the Hebrew word, and it means an experiential knowing. I did not have an experiential, intimate knowing of the God who's been here the entire time. And we actually see this word yada used early in the scriptures when it says Adam Yada Eve, Adam knew Eve, Adam Yada Eve, and she became pregnant with Cain. So, it's not just like Adam took a quiz and got a lot of right answers and then he became pregnant. So no, there's an intimacy here going that you can talk about on the way home. You're welcome, parents. Appreciate that. We're jumping into all kinds of good stuff this morning, right? Right. So, Jacob noticed, I didn't realize it, but God's been here the entire time. And this is a big deal. Then he leaves and he wanders off with nothing but a stick, a walking stick to his name. He ends up at his Uncle Laban's house, you know, Uncle Laban, in Haran, and he goes and for the next 20 years he works for his uncle. He marries and has a bunch of kids, which you want to sink into that narrative because it's like a Jerry Springer episode on steroids. Like, it's crazy. So you can read about that. We won't get into it. But in this, he has a family, and then God speaks to him and says, it's time to go back to your family. It's time to go back to your land and to your brother Esau, and it's time to face him. So Jacob then says, okay, here we go. He sends some servants ahead to go and let his brother know he's coming. His servants come back and say to him, yep, we went and saw your brother. He's actually on his way and he's coming with 400 men, which is like an army. And Jacob wets his tunic and we'll pick up the story there like, whoa, here he comes. So within that, we're going to pick up the story there, and we're going to be in Genesis 32, verses 9 through 12. It says, then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, you're the one who told me this, God. Go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two camps. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children, his family. But you have said, here he goes again, second time right in here, hey, remember God? You said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. Twice in here, hey, God, remember, you're the one that told me to go back here, so I'm assuming you've got this, right? You're going to take care of me as I go back and face my brother. Then what Jacob does is he sends ahead groups of animals as gifts to his brother to essentially earn favor, soften him up. Hey, here are some gifts. And then tell him that I'm going to be right behind these gifts. This takes us to verse 20. And what I want to do, though, is this is how it would be interpreted literally from the Hebrew. This is important how we read this then. In verse 20, it says this. Jacob thought, we get into his thoughts, I will try to face him, that's Esau, by sending him gifts that point to my face. When I see his face in person, perhaps he will be friendly to my face. Anything stick out to you? Face. Actually, 7 times in verses 16 to 21, this word face is used 4 times in this verse alone. The word for face in the Hebrew is panim. Go ahead and say panim. Panim. What it is doing is, they didn't, in the Hebrew language, they don't have like the adjectives that we would to kind of ramp up the intensity of something. So what they do is they repeat something. And when it's repeated over and over, it's basically a big blinking neon sign saying, pay attention to me. This is important. Face. What Jacob is going to do is he's going to face his brother, his past, himself. Lots of facing about to happen. Then what Jacob does is he tells his family, you're going to cross the Jabbok here. You're going to go across. Go across now, which brings us to verse 24, that then this is what happens. Jacob, now sending his family, has left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak, which is like kind of jumps out of nowhere. A man, where'd he come from? What? Now the Hebrew here for man is actually the word ish, and it can mean angel, man, person, angel of God. There's all kinds of things, and the rabbis have a ball with this. As they midrash, they commentate on this, and they go, some rabbis say this is the angel of Esau. Some say it's the angel of God early on. Then others say actually it's himself that Jacob is wrestling with. He's wrestling with himself. So if you're like, well, which is it? The answer is, yep. Great. All of it, right? So what happens is Jacob wrestles with this Ish. And it's here in this wrestling match, which is just a brilliant picture. In this wrestling match, Jacob first owns, for the first time, who he is and the life he has lived. He owns this, how the angel says to him, as he struggles with him, he says, what is your name? And Jacob says, my name is Jacob. That's the first time he's actually owned who he is. And remember, Jacob means deceiver. And so a name is very important then. And it's the first time, because early in the story, his dad, when he was blind, asked him, hey, who are you? And he actually says, I'm Esau. And he asked him again, well, who are you? And he says, I'm Esau. And so the first time in the narrative, Jacob says, I'm Jacob, which is a way of saying, I own. Yeah, I'll recognize how I've lived to this point. I'll own that. And then, as soon as he owns who he is, the angel goes, we're not going to call you Jacob anymore then. Your name is going to be Israel. And Israel means he struggles with God. One who wrestles with God. God wrestles. And he says, because you have wrestled, struggled with God and with man, you get this name. This is who you will be now. And then after the wrestling match, in verse 30 of chapter 32, Jacob says this. This place in which I wrestled, we're going to name it Peniel. Go ahead and say Peniel. Peniel means facing God. That's what it means. And for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared. Not just spared. I would argue his life is being shifted, transformed. It's being awakened to more. It is being deeply enriched. And so Jacob says, this place is where I went face to face with God. Now Jacob approaches his brother Esau, and what's interesting is as he approaches his brother Esau, says as he walks up to him, he bows down to him 7 times. 7 in the Hebrew consciousness is kind of wholeness, completeness. He's bowing down. What he's trying to say is, I want peace. I want to put this thing back together. Please forgive me. Please have favor here. But the thing is, as he's doing this, Esau runs to him. runs to him, meets him, hugs him, falls on his neck, kisses him, and they both weep. And the language, the writing there, he runs to him, embraces him, falls on his neck, kisses him. If you're familiar at all with the story Jesus tells about two sons, we often call the prodigal son story, where a father runs and embraces and kisses. Yeah, Jesus is saying, yeah, he's pulling from this. So his brother meets him, kisses him. Then he even says to him, now what's the story with the caravan of animals? Why did you give me all of these animals? I don't really need it. That's unnecessary. And that brings us to verse 10 and 11 of chapter 33. Watch this movement. No, Jacob said, no, please, if I have found favor in your eyes, then you will take my offering from my hand, for this is the reason I've seen your face. It is like seeing the face of God. And you've accepted me. Please, these words, take my blessing. Whew. Why this is important? Early in the story, Jacob steals Esau's blessing. And the word blessing there, barakah, it's the same word. The writer is saying what he took there, he has now had a shift in his life, and he went from taking to what? Giving. He's moved from existing in his little hoop to recognizing there's more out there, there's more going on, and he's now stepping out and say, what I've taken, I now need to give. Please, why? Why? Because God has been gracious to me. And because I have everything. Whew. Gratitude. So he kept urging him until he accepted it. One of those people. You know those people? No, please have a bite to eat. No, that's all right. Please have a bite to eat. No, that's okay. And then okay, never mind that. No, please, please, please. He won't stop until his brother takes it. Here's the thing. Jacob wrestled. He stood face to face with his past, with his selfish ways. He faces his brother and his future. I would say this. Jacob moves from existence to recognition to goodness. There is a move here. And then Jacob describes this whole wrestling match, this struggle in his life, as going face to face with God. Fascinating. Hello. Now watch this. This is fantastic. The prophet Isaiah reflects on this, talks about this story, but the reality is this story from Jacob to Israel is also the story of the birth of the nation of Israel. So way more is going on. But Isaiah the prophet says this about this whole thing. In Isaiah 43:1, it's fantastic. But now this is what the Lord, Yahweh, says. He who created you, Jacob, he who formed you, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine. Now here's the fantastic part. Oh, Jacob, you were created. The word created in the Hebrew is bara. Go ahead and say bara. Bara, it means to create. Now the word formed is yatsar. Go ahead and say yatsar. It means to squeeze into shape. Oh, Jacob, you were created, but in order to become Israel, you needed to be squeezed into shape. Anyone feel that in their life ever? Hey, before I was ready for this, I had to go through all of that. If I would have been just given this back then, I would have wrecked it. I wouldn't have been able to appreciate it. I wouldn't have understood it. But because I was squeezed into shape, I get it. I get it. God growing us up. Now, here's the thing. Greg last week mentioned Mother Teresa. Was September 4, 2016, the Pope Francis canonized, that is, sainted Mother Teresa. sainted Mother Teresa, and he said this woman, she traveled the world with one singular message, and that message was love and caring are the most important things in the world. And then he said, remember, Mother Teresa said this, and we'll put it on the screen. The biggest disease today is not leprosy or tuberculosis, but rather the feeling of being unwanted, uncared for, and deserted by everybody. The greatest evil is the lack of love and charity. Ready? The terrible indifference toward one's neighbor who lives at the roadside, assaulted by exploitation, corruption, poverty, and disease. Indifference. Now here's the thing. To bring it to you and I, that's not just a quote. That's a word to flesh and blood reality that has become a part of me, especially, I would say, in the last 10 years. I planted a church, the group of people, in Muskegon, Michigan, and that's where we've been for the last decade. Is it a church in Muskegon? And this reality has done a work on me. What Mother Teresa is talking about, time and time again. And more recently, we had a partner ministry of support called the Hope Project. The Hope Project is a ministry that rescues and restores those who find themselves in human trafficking, being trafficked. And so in our partnership with them, we've spent time promoting them, sharing their story, and then earlier this year, we had some survivors that were being trafficked, some survivors share their story at the front porch, which is the church we started. We had them come in and share their story. One story that just undid me, and they all did, but one story. This young lady talks about being trafficked, and then she said, one day, the guy who was trafficking her took her to the grocery store. And in the grocery store, she said, we began to walk in the grocery store and she became hyper-focused at making eye contact, trying to make eye contact with people. And it was so hard. She said, no one was looking at me. And you all know why, right? Because it's called the fog of the grocery store. You know this, right? And so we get in our cart and we get in this box that doesn't have any windows. There are no clocks in this place. Everything is labeled up. And so we do this. Peanut butter bread. And we've got to get that list down. And we, peanut butter bread, where are the crackers? What's the label 10? 10 yellow. There's a 10B. And so where am I? And looking down at our list and we're doing this. We're in this fog of grocery shopping. Where am I? Lane 4. Bread, pickles. Where are the spices? And we get in this fog, do we not? In the grocery store. In fact, I had a friend tell me this morning, he almost ran into somebody yesterday in the grocery store and she said, oh, sorry, I was in a fog. And I was like, oh, that's so good. Because, I mean, it's true. I'm good. I'm sorry. You almost got run over. Apologize about that one, but... Right? And so she's hyper-focused. And all she keeps saying in her head over and over again is, will someone please see me? Will someone see me? Because she knew if someone would make eye contact with her, she knew they would see the pain, the suffering, the hurt, and the please rescue me written all over her eyes. But she was told, if you holler out, you try and escape, you will be killed. So she's just in there going, my eyes are my everything right now. Someone please see me. She then walks by the community board. And on the community board, she sees a picture of herself. That's me, missing. So then all of a sudden, everything but her heart screaming. All up to that. What? Look. And she's making eye contact at that, and she's looking at people. Someone, please, see me. Someone, see me. That day, no one saw her. She did not get rescued that day. She eventually was rescued, But there was a gap between that day and when she was rescued, because no one saw her. No one made eye contact with her to see her. She needed one person that day to move from existence to recognition so there could be a possibility of goodness. Just one person to move. I'm reminded of this. Last year, remember driving downtown Grand Rapids with my family, and we pull up to a stoplight, and there's the guy with the sign right outside my window. And what do? I do the stare ahead. You know the stare ahead, right? If I look ahead, I'm not going to look at him. Don't want to make eye contact with him. I know what a sign says, so I'm going to look ahead. And then I hear my wife say, "Wally, roll down your window. Give the man the crackers and the granola bar that we have sitting in our console, sitting there. Just give that to him." Oh, that guy. Yeah, I was doing the stare ahead. So give it to him. He smiles. "Thank you. Thank you." Earlier this year, we're down in Florida. My wife has some family there, so we visit them when it becomes frigid here, if we can. So the 9 months that it's frigid here, we try and pick a couple days that we can get down there. We're in Florida. We're leaving Florida, and we're going to drive our minivan. We're going to drive back to Michigan. And you're thinking, you drive all that way back and forth with three boys, 9, 6, and 3 years old. Well done there. So we're heading back, and we know enough that if we get some food in the van, that will help a little, that maybe we don't just dissolve into chaos too quickly. Maybe we'll make it to Georgia. So we went to the grocery store, we stocked up, and we got a bunch of groceries for the road trip home. We get in the van, we're in the parking lot of the grocery store, and we're pulling out, and there's the guy. There's a guy standing there with a sign, and I do the stare ahead. And my 6-year-old son, Eli, goes, he reads the sign, and he goes, "Mom, Dad, this man is hungry, and we have bags of food sitting in front of us." So I said to him, "Well, what do you think he would want?" So my son's like, "Oh, he would want this and something good." But then at the same time, he's like, "And this cookie. Everybody wants this big cookie." That's true. So what we did is we rolled down the window and let my son, my 6-year-old, hand the man the food. So here you go. The guy says, "Thank you." And here's the thing. It wasn't either or. It wasn't, well, either we eat or he eats. We had bags of groceries still when we left. And we both left, he, the man, and our family, with smiles that communicated, there might be hope yet. There might be hope yet. Here's the thing. Paul, the Apostle Paul, in his writing to the churches, that's important to know, he doesn't write guilt-glomming, shaming, "You guys need to do this." He writes with invitation. For us, it's an invitation. Will you move from existence to recognition to goodness? It's an invitation. Will you cultivate your heart for growth? And here's my challenge for you. Simply make eye contact. Would you simply make eye contact with somebody? Because here's what I understand. When you look someone in the eye, when you look a person in the eye, a person becomes more human then. And when I say a person becomes more human, not just them, but me and you, we become more human when we see someone, when we see them. And we can move then from existence to recognition to goodness. The writer Annie Dillard says this: "We are here to notice each thing so each thing gets noticed. Together we notice not only each mountain shadow and each stone on the beach, but especially we notice the beautiful faces and complex natures of each other." We're here to notice so things and people get noticed. Eye contact. And what's fantastic about this is Greg last week, if you were here, Greg mentioned that kindness goes beyond the heart and moves to the hands, that you do something. And I was thinking about the eyes. This symphony includes the eyes. Heart, hands, eyes, and it struck me. Jesus' healing ministry. Think of Jesus' healing ministry. He healed deaf ears so that those ears could hear the cry of others. He healed deformed hands so they could become helping hands. It wasn't just healing for healing's sake. He healed crippled legs so someone could walk alongside of someone else who's hurting. And he healed blind eyes so they would see the needs, the lives of others. There's always a movement. It's never just because, but there's a movement. There's an invitation. So one last thing. I want to put a prayer on screen. It's from a prayer book called The Gorillas of Grace. And I want this to be a prayer for us because it's just stunning. Oh God, let something essential happen to me. Wake me up. Something more than interesting or entertaining or thoughtful. Let something essential happen to me. Something awesome, something real. Speak to my condition, Lord, and change me somewhere inside where it matters. Let something happen which is in my real self, oh God. Disrupt me because I can tend to get into the grocery store fog. I can tend to only be in my hoop. Disrupt that. Shake that. Rattle that, God. Invite me to recognize so that there's a possibility for good. Are you with me? What I'd love to do is just tweak this prayer. Pray this for us. And I want to invite the band up. And they're going to do a song where you, if you want the words to just wash over you as a prayer, fantastic. If you want to stand and shout and dance and sing the lyrics because it's a celebration, fine. Whatever it is that you need to do. But I'd love to pray this prayer, just tweak it so it's an us and it's not just a me, but for us, that God would move us. That God would move us from existence to recognition to goodness. So the prayer goes, oh God, let something essential happen to us. Something more than interesting or entertaining or thoughtful. Let something essential happen to us. Something awesome, something real. Speak to our condition, Lord, and change us as a church somewhere inside where it matters. Let something happen which is in our real self, oh God. And God, as you move us, invite us to step out into the world to participate with you in bringing goodness. May you get the honor and the glory. And we bless you with it. In the name of Christ. Amen.